You're listening to Sounds Good on WKMS. It's our midday music and community conversation program. I am Tracy Ross in the studio with Kate Lochte and Murray State Marketing Professor Glenn Mangold. Thanks for being on Sounds Good this morning.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me.
Dr. Mangold's title in full form is Distinguished Professor of Marketing and Emerging Technologies. And as such, we thought it would be really interesting to hear your take on the business of the Super Bowl ads, in addition to the impact, those that you found most impactful. And when you were thinking about it, it looks to me like your first thought is, because of audience fragmentation, the Super Bowl is a plum.
Yes, it is. If your target audience is a very broad audience of middle America, if you think about it, the traditional primetime television programming used to deliver that audience extremely well. Now, though, it's very fragmented. People are watching various cable channels as well as NBC, ABC, CBS, and, of course, now Fox. The young audience, the 18 to 34 audience, which is the one the advertisers are willing to pay the most for, is even more fragmented. They're playing video games, engaging with YouTube, listening to music on iPod-type devices, iPhones, things of that nature. And they've always been a very difficult audience to reach just because they're so busy with their young lives. And so it's getting increasingly difficult for advertisers to reach a broad mass audience with any media, traditional or non-traditional. And the Super Bowl is one of the few things left out there that delivers that audience pretty efficiently.
I was interested in seeing the actually three ads that played during the Super Bowl that struck you as having the most meaning. Would you speak to those three categories of ads?
Yes. I guess in terms of categories, the ad that is really hitting a home run in terms of all the viewer responses is the one where they're connecting with a call, specifically Budweiser, the hero's welcome. They had a soldier who came back from Afghanistan, and Budweiser arranged for him to have a welcome back to the USA, back to the States. And that's really kind of a cause when you think about it, because it's support of the soldiers, the troops, the heroic efforts that they're making, and kind of a celebration of their return. So connecting with a cause is really a theme that you see in a lot of advertising now that works quite well. And it may not be a cause like the Heart Association or the American Cancer Association, but it could be something more grassroots, like, you know, appreciation for the soldiers returning home, or just basic feelings of patriotism and that sort of thing. We see another something similar to a cause connecting with America, kind of a patriotic theme. Chrysler did, I think, a good job of that with Bob Dylan. Basically, Bob Dylan, the old folk singer, that was saying, buy your cars made in America. You can buy your cell phones made somewhere else. You can buy other products made somewhere else. But when you buy a car, buy your car made in America. And I think that resonated a lot with a lot of people, particularly since Bob Dylan has never been a particularly commercially oriented sort of person, as most folk singers are not. And back in their roots, back in the 60s and 70s, they were kind of anti-product, anti-marketing, anti-business. So I think that particular ad probably carried a considerable amount of punch.
And you said, I had seen some activity on my Facebook denying that was really Bob Dylan. But you believe it is.
Absolutely. Yeah. I actually saw him in concert here last year when he came to Murray State, and I got a pretty good up-close look at him, and he doesn't look like he did in the 70s, but neither do I. And and that was definitely Bob Dylan, no question in my mind that it was.
Well, I heard him as well, but I wasn't close enough to see him. So good for you to have nailed that down. And then you found meaning and punch in an ad that I missed the opening on, but it was the Volkswagen ad that you find particularly interesting as well.
I like the Volkswagen ad. It is not tracking well in the ad meter results and that sort of thing. And I don't think it will, because it didn't have a tug on the heartstrings. It wasn't particularly – it wasn't delightful. In fact, parts of it I think were in kind of bad taste. But I liked it because it sold the product extremely well. The gist of the ad was that there was a father and his young daughter, looked like she was maybe 12, 13. They were riding in the car, and he was explaining to her the myth that every time a Volkswagen turned over 100,000 miles, which his just had, that an engineer at Volkswagen got his angel's wings. And so they went through several iterations of showing engineers with their wings and kind of humorous. And I'll let you watch the ad on YouTube to get the rest of it, because, again, some of it wasn't in the absolute best taste. But it was a good sales tool, because it made the point that Volkswagens are reliable and durable, and they'll last 100,000, even 200,000 miles, which came out very strongly in that ad. And that was exactly what they were trying to communicate. So I'm an old line marketing guy. I think that the ad has to sell the product. If it doesn't sell the product, it isn't very effective. Now, that doesn't mean that every product should have a hard technical sale to the extent that that one did, but it still does have to sell the product.
The pistachio ad went cut right to the chase, don't you think?
I think it did reasonably well. That's one that kind of passed me by, and I went back and watched it again on DVR, and I think it was effective. It was kind of buried in the middle of the Super Bowl and in the middle of a pod of ads. The fact that they had the ad, they went to another ad, came back to it, that's a really good technique in terms of drawing people in, and I think in terms of retention of the ad. But it didn't impact me as well as it probably did some other folks. I went back and reviewed these because I knew I was going to be here talking to you today.
Well, we were chatting a bit ago about some of the Twitter universe saying that there was an ad for Scientology in the middle of everything. And I didn't notice it. And you said that when you were tracking the ads, there was one insert that you just didn't know what to make of. Would you tell about that sequence?
It was sort of a mention. There's a lot of things in there that I think most viewers probably just totally miss. They get it, but it doesn't really register. And I call them mentions, where the announcer mentions that such and such company is a sponsor of the halftime show or the post-game show or something else in the show. And those mentions won't last more than a few seconds. And so I was actually jotting down the mentions also. And there was one company, one product that was mentioned. I couldn't get the name of it. It wasn't in writing, so I couldn't see the spelling. And I went back and watched it two or three times to try to get it. And honestly, I still don't know what they mentioned. So if that advertiser paid money for that mention, then as far as I'm concerned, they wasted their money.
Indeed.
And, there's a lot of things that I think in the advertising world, particularly in Super Bowl advertising, the advertising is geared to the immediate emotional response that the viewers feel. But that may or may not sell the product. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But in my mind, if you ask someone, somebody can have an emotional response, and you ask them 2 minutes later what product was being sold, if they can't tell you, then I have to question, was that really an effective commercial? Now, if the product is clearly tied to the commercial, and one of the top ones, maybe the top commercial from last night's Super Bowl, was the puppy love, the Budweiser, the horse and the little puppy. And if you remember that particular commercial, the puppy kept running back home so he could be with the Clydesdale. That tugged at people's heartstrings. And because it was a Clydesdale, and because there's a continuing string of those commercials that's gone on for decades, linking the Clydesdale with the Budweiser brand, I think that really worked. I think that connected the Budweiser brand to the heartstring feel of it, and it trended really high on the ad meter results that USA Today did. And everything else that I've read also indicated that that particular commercial was probably number one. And I think it probably did sell the product. That's another thing. It's kind of, you get into some of the technical aspects, but you don't sell beer the same way you sell Volkswagens. And the same messages, the same communications that work for one don't necessarily work for another. So I think for the Budweiser product or the Budweiser product lines, I think the Puppy Love commercial worked really well.
What was on the bottom of the ad meter?
The bottom of the ad meter. That's a good question. DreamWorks had one called Need for Speed. That was a movie that they were showing. There's a lot of movies and TV shows that were advertised. And, of course, all the TV shows were Fox shows or, affiliated with Fox in some fashion. GoDaddy's bodybuilder commercial went down to the bottom. And I kind of thought, just because it was so unusual, that it would probably trend higher. Sprint had one on its family plan, which I think that was more of an execution. I think they could have done more with that messaging than they did.
How did the Tim Tebow series go?
That one, I don't see it listed here. It wasn't in the top. I think it was kind of in the middle somewhere. I did see some discussion about it this morning on some of the media. I think a lot of people liked it because they had Tim Tebow in it. Mm-hmm. Tim Tebow was carrying two puppies in his arms, running away from the fire. And animals, particularly puppies and kittens, sell really well. People like those kittens, babies, puppies, things like that. And so now you've got Tim Tebow, who's got his own unique persona now, carrying two puppies. I think that worked for a lot of people.
But on the other hand, if we're talking dogs, the Dober Wawa dog.
Oh yeah, I don't even remember what product they were trying to sell. So I guess that was a fail.
If you don't remember it, it was definitely a fail.
Wasn't it Audi?
Audi. Yeah. Yes, yeah. Audi. Yes, yeah. The German car manufacturer.
And the thing was, compromise is bad.
That's right.
The punchline, which I really kind of worried about that for a while. why compromise would be bad. I understood it in terms of the product, but in terms of the idea, it didn't work with me.
Yeah, I think the ideology of it may not have set well. What they were saying was, of course, don't compromise. Go ahead and buy the Audi and don't buy something that's less than an Audi. That was the attempt that they were trying to make. The Doberman Wawa commercial, I saw the social media stuff leading up to that, and I thought it was just really weird and creepy. And when I saw it on the programming, maybe I'd already been desensitized a little bit, but it didn't strike me as being as creepy. But it also did not rate very highly, and apparently other people thought it was creepy as well. When you got a Chihuahua body with a Doberman head, but this creature is still acting like a Chihuahua and scaring everybody because, Chihuahuas are little kind of harmless dogs that go around just being really kind of aggressive and in your face, but nobody worries about it because they're Chihuahuas. You put a Doberman head on it, and it's a pretty frightening creature. And so I get the humor, but it still, to me, was kind of creepy. And again, if all you can remember is this strange creature with a big head and a little body that's, scaring everybody, and you don't remember what the product was, did you really sell the product? And again, to me, a car is something that kind of there's room for salesmanship. It's not just heartstring kind of stuff. It's not just imagery like you would have with soft drinks or beer. But there's lots of technical things about a car that can be brought out, like reliability and durability and things of that nature. Chevrolet did a good job with that, with connecting back to the heartstrings of America. One of their ads was tied into cancer. There was a guy driving his truck with his wife, and apparently they just found out she had cancer. It was a very touching sort of a thing. One of my favorites, just because I come from a rural background, grew up on a farm and everything, that just kind of struck home with my roots, was the one Chevrolet did with the bull that was being transported to a different farm, and he was considered, a very eligible bachelor. And, to me, that just, I like the humor. I like the connection with the farm and the truck, and I understood it. Had I been raised in an urban area, I may not have gotten it, but I loved it. And I suspect other people in rural areas may have too.
Now, looking at the Super Bowl as a business opportunity, tell me how many people watched and how much money did advertisers spend and why?
I don't have numbers for this particular Super Bowl, but based on previous Super Bowls, about 130 to 140 million people in the U.S. would be a good number. They're saying about $4 million for a 30-second spot, which I'm sure there's some flexibility in that, depending on the beginning of the Super Bowl is going to be more valuable than the end because, particularly last night, a lot of people weren't watching at the end. Where you are in the – it's called a pod of commercials. You'll get four or five, even six of them in a pod. And if you're in the middle of the pod, then that's probably less effective than at the beginning or the end of the pod. So there's a lot of variables there. But $4 million for a half-second commercial seems like a really, really huge amount of money. And it is. But it calculates out to – about 25 or 30 cents per thousand exposures, which is kind of your unit of measure in advertising. So, you know, you're thinking about it, you're exposing 1,000 people to your message for 30 cents. That still sounds like a bit of a bargain when you put it in those terms. And it's a pretty highly motivated audience because these numbers show that about 40, 45%, maybe 42 would be a good number, 42% of the people see the commercials as one of their primary motivations for watching the Super Bowl. So a lot of people are tuned in purely to see the commercials and to talk about the commercials. So you got a pretty high engagement factor, which you don't get with other a lot of other programming. In fact, a lot of people that are glued to the commercials during the Super Bowl, during regular programming, they may be recording the program on their DVR so they can fast forward through the commercials. So where they may be actively seeking them out in the Super Bowl, they're actively avoiding them during other types of programming, which is a huge, huge issue for advertisers. You know, they pay all that money and then we fast forward through it. So, they don't like that, but they really can't do anything about it either.
Now, something that's changed in my lifetime with the Super Bowl is that all of the Facebook and the Twitter activity are ancillary effects of the money you spend on an ad. The Doritos stuff, tell me about what they did.
Yeah, Doritos engaged in what's called crowdsourcing. Basically, they had a contest, and thousands of people submitted their homemade ads. Some of them were just average people that knew how to use a video camera. Many of them were people that had some experience in the advertising, public relation world, a little bit of technical expertise that maybe the average person wouldn't have. Some of them were even very, very small startup advertising agencies that maybe really hadn't gotten off the ground yet. But they've been doing this for about 8 years, so apparently it works. So you get thousands of submissions, and they go through the submissions and screen them and take it down to 15 finalists. Those 15 finalists are promoted pretty heavily. There's a lot of social media surrounding the 15 finalists, and people watch it and view it, and I'm sure they're monitoring to see what people are saying about it. And then they narrow it down to the final five, and then the public gets to vote on those final five. And according to the USA Today scan data that came in, the ad meter data, two out of the top four commercials were Doritos commercial that came from this crowdsourcing. So one of them was the cowboy kid, a little girl riding the dog and basically, you know, getting the Doritos away from her brother. And it was kind of humorous. It combined a lot of things that people liked. It combined dogs and kids and Doritos. So it worked out pretty well. That was the number two commercial according to the ad meter results. Budweiser's Puppy Love was number one with the horses and the puppy. And Doritos Cowboy Kid was number two. Budweiser's Heroes Welcome was number three, according to that, being the soldier returning home from Afghanistan. And then the fourth one was Doritos Time Machine, which I thought was a really cute commercial. And frankly, the one I would have voted for being number one as a little boy that he had this big cardboard box. And for a bag of Doritos, you get to go into this box, which is a time machine. And once you're in there, he's kicking it and pushing it and shaking it and making noise. And then when he comes out, basically he's supposed to be in a time warp or something. The kid's probably eating the Doritos by then. The punchline was that there was this old man standing there, and of course he thought it was the kid. But that was, I thought, a really cute commercial, and that again was crowdsourced. The one that I thought would probably make it, that again I found kind of creepy, made me uncomfortable, was a Doritos crowdsourced commercial where this guy would stick his finger through a hole in the wall and it would come out clean. And it was, I won't go through the whole commercial, but as a matter of fact, just look it up on YouTube. It was creepy. It made me feel uneasy, and I think it's good that it probably didn't make the final the final cut. But I really thought it would, just because it was creepy and kind of outlandish and humorous and memorable. So it had some things about it, and I think maybe in previous year's Super Bowls, it probably would have made it, but the tone seems to be a little bit more settled down and sedate for this year's commercials.
Well, it was the commercial side of it, as usual, was more interesting. Well, not as usual. It was just a sad kind of a game, but I appreciate your being with us today to make the review, and I look forward to understanding how you use this in a classroom. Can you tell me that briefly? What do you do with this in your classroom?
I teach a class called Social Media and Marketing, and we focus on what our company is doing with social media. How do they use that as part of the overall communications mix in order to make it work? And more, you really can't separate the two out. When these ads were running, the companies had their people out there monitoring Twitter and Facebook, but particularly Twitter, see what people were saying about it. They were responding back to those tweets. They were getting a read on the impact of the commercials, who it was reaching, and so on. And they'll find various ways over the next several days and even weeks to get added punch in the social media world by, you know, links, Twitter links, Facebook links, YouTube. They all have their YouTube channels and so on. And the social media before and after the commercials really does give it a lot of added punch that, again, sort of justifies that $4 million for a 30-second spot on TV. Without that, you know, you just simply wouldn't have as much value. And part of the game has been to create the value on the front end and the back end with social media. So traditional media advertising and social media really are running hand in hand. And more, I don't think you can separate them out. If we have just a couple more minutes, there's another example. We talked about crowdsourcing with the Doritos commercial. Intuit, which is the software company that does QuickBooks and Quicken and TurboTax, they sponsored a contest. So they market to small businesses. That's their target market. And one small business, they would basically put up the $4 million or so and put their ad on the Super Bowl. And so I'm sure there's a lot of social media, a lot of engagement leading up to it. The winner was a company called Goldieblocks, G-O-L-D-I-E-B-L-O-X. And that's a company that makes educational toys specifically targeted at girls in order to get them interested in engineering and technical things, building and that sort of thing. So Intuit sponsored Goldieblocks for a 30-second commercial. And I saw an interview with the owner of Goldieblocks, and she was really ecstatic and felt like it was going to really move her company forward. So, again, there's a lot of social media punch, not only in the build-up to the contest, but now afterwards there will be a lot of social media punch again with this particular product and this business owner and the business and Intuit, the TurboTax, Quicken, QuickBooks people will be the beneficiaries of that. So, again, pretty good tie-in between the social media and the actual advertising itself, giving you a lot more bang for your buck than just 30 seconds of airtime.
Really great survey of this, and I appreciate your spending the time to watch the Super Bowl so carefully.
Oh,
it was
welcome.
An assignment, wasn't it?
I would have watched it anyway. I probably would not have gone back and reviewed the commercials again. And quite frankly, I might have checked out sometime around the beginning of the fourth quarter because my team was not doing very well at all. It was quite painful.
I'm so sorry.
And I think most people in this part of the country are. But better luck next year. Maybe Peyton and the Broncos will be back next year. We'll see.
We can hope so. Glenn Mangold is Distinguished Professor of Marketing and Emerging Technologies at Murray State University, and we thank you for being here today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. It was my pleasure.